52 million Americans, okay, 18.4% of Americans over the age of 12 have deliberately misused prescription drugs at least once in their lifetime. This is the Addiction Recovery Podcast with Stephen T. Ginsberg, founder of Restore Detox Centers in sunny California. Enjoy your experience. Imagine this, Stephen. You walk into your kids' rooms. I know how much you love your kids. You have a son, a daughter. I love them so much too. They're like such great kids. But you walk in, let's just say you walk into your daughter's room and you find a bag of weed in her dresser. What do you do?
First thing I do for sure is pray. That is my number one, because I am going to completely have to be pulled out of the ceiling. And the second thing I would do is go to my daughter, go to our daughter, and sit down with her and present it to her and ask her why it's there and what it's all about, and ask her to tell me what's going on. I would confront it directly from the get-go and ask her to explain herself to me, and then I would do my best that I could within the moment to really, really listen.
Okay. And now let's talk about, you know, what about from a spouse or a partner perspective? You know, as a husband, you find drugs in your wife's vanity. What do you do?
Yeah. It's, I think the most important thing, and I think these are great questions, really good topic to look at. And these, you know, these things do happen. People discover things. People discover pills they didn't know were there. People discover marijuana, to your point before. People sometimes, you know, Steve, people sometimes discover like what they think is a water bottle and it's got vodka in it. These things all occur. And I think the most important thing to do with, if we're going to trace it back to whom we think it's from, is first of all, without being accusatory, ask them, is it theirs? And then give them the opportunity to come clean with us. And then when they do, I think it's important not to shame. I think it's important not to blame. I think it's important not to disparage. I think the imperative part here, Steve, is to find out what is going on, like what is hurting you, what is happening, and how can I help?
Yeah.
How can I help you?
And when you're saying shame, what are you talking about? Like going into your kids' room and be like, what the heck is this? Like,
I mean, completely. There's already something going on. There's some degree, there's some element of pain. There's something that's occurring that is causing them to need this substance to make it through their day or their days. What good is it going to do if we're going to throw gasoline on that fire when we need to nurture and love and never shoot our wounded? And sometimes our children are, who are so precious to us all, are our wounded. Or sometimes our spouse, who's so precious to us all, is our wounded. Or sometimes it's a parent that is struggling. And we've got to really build people up and realize in this moment of need, we're not going to be able to help them bridge the gap by demeaning them or shaming them. There's enough shame they're carrying around that they're having to use or abuse whatever it is that we found.
And I love that. And I think that's so important not to shame somebody. I completely agree with you. And I especially like how you talked about pain. And I have tattoos, you know that. I have tattoos on my arm and on my back and so on and so forth. But when I see other people with tattoos, oftentimes I'll think to myself, whether this is right, wrong, or indifferent, I'll think to myself, I wonder what their pain is. Because oftentimes, you know, we get tattoos. Maybe we want to get a tattoo because it's fun. We're out with our friends and we always want to get that giant sailor anchor on our bicep or whatever it may be, that tramp on our back, you know, the tramp stamp, whatever.
Love it.
Maybe that's the case. But sometimes I think people, they do these things to release, like to create this release because they're dealing with pain. And what's crazy is that I was looking at some stats here, and about 17% of all people will self-harm themselves during their lifetime. And about 45% of those that do self-harm, they cut themselves as this method of self-injury. And so I think that's really fascinating because, you know, we deal with pain as human beings. We all are inflicted with pain at some point in our lives. And I always joke, it's like, okay, I have this trial and tribulation right now. Should I like ask for it to be removed? Or maybe I'm good with it because I don't know what the next one's going to be. But we're constantly dealing with like this pain, this emotional pain, physical pain, whatever. I mean, that's this world. We deal with pain. But sometimes people don't have the coping mechanisms to deal with that pain appropriately. Or maybe they just don't have the people in their lives to be supportive and to be loving, and therefore they have to find an outlet. But unfortunately, they turn to drugs and alcohol or self-harm or some variation thereof. What are your thoughts on that? What have you seen, Stephen?
It's just very much akin to what you're discussing. There's hurt and all sorts of hurting going on. And rather than starting to face and process through the issues, or face and start to process through the things they're carrying around that are long-standing resentments, they are trying to anesthetize what's bothering them. And it's actually just making the issue magnify in scope and spectrum. And the very element they're using to take that pain away, they're creating greater pain and greater disparity in their lives and in their walks and in their paths and in their families. It's just completely counterproductive, but unfortunately, it's not counterintuitive. We're always looking to something to fix, something to make it better. And at the end of the day, no matter which way you turn, the whole thing is an inside job. It's about processing to the truth. It's about facing and understanding that the emotions and the feelings, that's not what's going to kill any of us. It's any element of drug abuse or use or alcohol use or abuse that ultimately can be what kills us, not the feelings behind it that we're trying to evade.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So let's go back to this idea of finding drugs and alcohol in our homes. And, you know, this could be quite a shock, you know, especially if you think your son isn't drinking and you find, you know, a bottle of whiskey hidden in their you know, dresser drawer or whatever it may be. But here's a problem that I see that's way bigger than just finding a bag of weed or cocaine or a bottle of whiskey, whatever it may be. 52 million Americans, okay, 18.4% of Americans over the age of 12 have deliberately misused prescription drugs at least once in their lifetime. You live in California, Stephen. That's where Restore Detox Centers is. 39 million people live in California. Okay, call it 40 million. All right, all the people in California, if you took that entire population, that's how many people, and then some, and 10 million more, misuse prescription drugs at least one time in their lifetime. And that's a massive problem. And that stuff's right in our medicine cabinets or under our sink in the bathroom.
And doctor prescribed very often, and unfortunately all too often, completely misused, abused, and it leads to far greater issues. And the scariest part to all that, Steve, is eventually when the doctors will no longer write the script, or when they can't find the methods or the means to continue to gain the prescription in the right capacity they're supposed to have it, they will go and hit the street for pills. And that's where you can catch a pill with fentanyl in it. And that is a death sentence. That's what's so frightening about prescription abuse and use.
Yeah. And if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, we do one exclusively on fentanyl. It's called What the F. Make sure you check that out, because that is scary stuff. I totally agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So going back to, we find drugs and alcohol in our house. Let's say it's our kids. So we find drugs, hardcore drugs, that say, do you kick them out? What do? You let that exist in the house, especially when you have other siblings and other kids in the house. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's a zero tolerance scenario. I mean, the drugs that have to exit immediately and have to be done away with immediately. And then it has to become a very quick turn to assessing the situation, finding out what's going on, finding out the history. Strongly recommend at that point you run out to the drugstore and you buy a panel test. Those are readily available at any drugstore anywhere, almost at any store anymore, Walmart, Target, et cetera, and find out if there's other things they're using that you haven't discovered yet. And you've got to get right into that mode where you've got to really get a good grasp at what's happening. Is this a one-off? Is this an anomaly? Is this an ongoing occurrence? What's driving the use? And then what is the solution going to be to eradicate that use? Because we can't enable that behavior, because enabling that behavior can end us up very quickly to where we're at the memorial service for a loved one.
Yeah. And speaking about enabling, you know, when I grew up, I was 3 years old. And I remember my mom telling me stories, not when I was three, but later on in life, about how us kids, there's five of us at the time, we were playing around in the house, and you know, my brother would find like a bag of cocaine in the couch between the cushions, and it was from my dad. And my mom finally went to him and said, "Look, you know, I'm tired of this. I'm done with these shenanigans. You choose drugs or your kids." Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he chose mm-hmm. the drugs. But I admire my mom for standing up and putting these boundaries in place. And I'm so glad that she did, because if she didn't, she'd just be enabling him. And guess what? He would have never got sober. He didn't even get sober when she kicked him out of the house and he went down this path. Eventually he died. He died of health-related issues from a life full of drug and alcohol abuse. And, you know, he died alone. And he was like living under a bridge in California. And it's like, what kind of life is that? And it's not because my mom kicked him out. It's because that was the path he was going to choose regardless. If he lived in the home, he would probably destroy, you know, his kids' lives. I mean, who knows? What if my brother got into like the bag and it caused like him to die? God forbid. So I think we have to be wise and protect our households, because our homes are these sanctuaries out in this world that is like broken and fallen. But it's hard too, because it's not like you want to like kick your 15-year-old out of the house if you find drugs on them. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some type of boundary there. I like how you mentioned going and getting this drug test. And I know you're a huge advocate on that. You talk about that all the time, about drug testing your kids. But there's got to be boundaries, whether it's with your kids or with your spouse, where you're like, hey, look, this isn't coming into my safe zone. And what are your thoughts about that, Stephen? And like, how do you, you know, still love people, but put boundaries up in place?
It's a non-negotiable, and you're just so spot on. We're talking about life and death, and we're talking about that hangs in the balance. And we're talking about the sanctity and the safety of our homes and other members of the household not being endangered. And look, let's be really transparent and on top of our business here. If it gets to the point where there's a discovery made and it's a complete shocker, and there's some sort of a surprising discovery, and there's some sort of illicit illegal narcotic involved, there's pretty good chance that there's a problem there that's going to be uncovered. And it's got to be on us to do the hard work and be realistic and roll up our sleeves and jump into transparency and the ask to be sharing good information shared with us and find out what's going on. And then from there, we create boundaries that are airtight. And it's very simple. It all stops, or you have to go, or you go get help, or you have to go, or all of the above. And any and everything involved to help that pattern of destruction stop in its tracks.
Yeah. I love how you said that. And I love how you mentioned boundaries. As you're listening to this, navigate over to RestoreDetoxCenters.com. Go to the website. We have this ebook called How to Love and Set Boundaries Without Enabling Addiction. It's a great resource. You could get that for free on the website. So I highly encourage you to check that out. Stephen, great talking with you about this important topic today.
Thank you so much. As usual, we're shining light on elements and pathways to the truth. We're doing our best to offer hope and the solution to save lives a day at a time and a topic at a time. So thank you so much for your part.